This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politrix.
Welcome back. It's another edition of Hashtag Politrix with Butsang Mudimwame Muilwa. A senior leader from a well-known political party recently said that the Western Cape is ruled by witches. Baloi. About Tagati. Just by reading or hearing that, you'd be forgiven for feeling like you were under some spell of bewilderment. Thankfully, here to cast away spells of political confusion with Eye of Newt and Leg of Snake is magician Mudimwame, or simply our Politrix commentator, Butsang Muilwa.
My brother, good morning, and thanks. At least I'm a magician, not a witch.
Mfana salamus. How are you doing?
I'm good. You know, it's the same as the head of state saying the opposition are mabrakana, you know, brakis.
Yeah, a braki. We had a braki when I was in grade 3. His name was Ginger. He was a braki without a tail. You know, dogs use their tails to stop or slow down.
When they run, yes.
So we'd make Ginger chase us, and then we stop. And then we watch him go...
animal abuse and cruelty.
And Ginger was such a braki, that we, opposite us, lived a vet. He had 3 German shepherds.
Ouch.
Whenever Ginger managed to sneak out of the house or dig under the fence,
and make noise,
he'd go after those German shepherds. And then one day he managed to dig under to get to those German shepherds.
Ginger was a problem.
He got into a fight with these German shepherds. They almost killed him, but he survived.
Oh.
And then after they stitched him up.
Was he that bad?
The same vet. No, he was stitched up because it was 3 German shepherds. He's a little braki. After they stitch him up and he's well again, he goes back. So maybe the president is right because these brakis don't give up.
and they keep on coming back to unseat the ruling party and they are not winning.
Exactly. In fact, things are intensifying. Political parties are campaigning. The DA are talking about jobs. The EFF talking about baby making and poverty. The MK is fighting the IEC. The independents are offering us a lot but nothing. And then there's guys going for provincial seats. But you ask them, what are you offering us? They can't really tell you anything. But they can tell you what the ANC is not doing.
Yeah,
but they're not telling you what they're going to do for you.
That's the problem, Fresh, that... the opposition, or they're supposed to be alternative in the country,
yes, sir,
is failing the electorate.
Sure.
More and more people are saying, I'm tired of the ANC.
Mm.
I think I need a change, but I can't find a viable alternative to vote for.
Sure.
I mean, for example, you mentioning the DA in the Western Cape, if we may start there.
Mm.
The DA, I don't know whether they've given up their regional or provincial party. Their national leader goes and talks about job creation in the Western Cape while they're contesting national elections. It doesn't make sense. Why would he want to focus on job creation in the Western Cape only?
May I tell you why he's saying that?
Mm-hmm.
He's saying, look at what we have done in the Western Cape. Allow us to replicate it elsewhere. That's probably why they're going to always sing praises of what's happening in the Western Cape.
In the Western Cape.
Because he's saying, you guys have trusted us in the Western Cape. The rest of the country needs to trust us because that's what we've done. Which makes sense.
It makes sense, but I interpreted it differently because he was saying they are focused on May Day, on the 1st of May, or International Workers' Day.
Yes, sir.
They are focused, and their message for International Workers' Day is to go and create jobs, to come with a plan of creating jobs in the Western Cape. Why wouldn't he say nationally the way they've done in Cape Town? I wouldn't even say in the Western Cape.
Mm.
I would say in the city of Cape Town. Because
when
we start mentioning Western Cape, it's a totally different ball game. But also we move on, and I think somebody must actually call Mr. Julius Sello Malema to order.
Okay, so who's that person who's going to do that?
Well, I'm just going to mention what he has done wrong.
I'll listen on the radio.
He has advisors and supporters and people who love him, and elders as well. You know, there's people in the economic freedom fighters like Advocate Dalimpo.
Sure.
They can talk to him. You know, I know that politicians tend to make rhetoric statements during the campaign time. But I looked at what is happening in the country, the issues of rape, teenage pregnancies, and a leader of the third biggest political party, and somebody respectable like Julius, stands up and say, in front of kids, because when you look at these rallies, especially of the EFF, you do find kids there.
Sure.
Under 16, they either they like him or they like the EFF, or they go there with their elders.
Sure.
and you say to them, go and have sex and make babies who will double the grants. I mean, that was a very reckless statement.
It was reckless.
He may come and defend politically and say, no, but I was not talking to the kids. I was talking to elders, even to elders, because the person of age 16 or 18 is an elder, age 16 is consensual, you know, age. And even them, can we afford youth that he's appealing to go and be pregnant with all the challenges in the country?
And you can say we will increase the various grants without saying to people, go and make babies.
Exactly, exactly. You can do that. That's why I'm saying it is an element of a rhetoric and, you know, ill advice or unfortunate statement. But I think Juju must, look, it's too late to apologize, but I know he will come back and clarify that.
Wouldn't you say he's basically just being on brand? Because often I agree with a lot of things Juju says, but I disagree with the how.
Yeah,
That his heart might be in the right place on various issues.
On various issues,
but
yes.
It's almost like he insists on the how being controversial so that there's talkability, is what I suspect.
What good does it do to the electorate and the followers and those? It doesn't do good to them. Understand? I'm telling you fresh, there are people who listen to politicians.
Absolutely.
Or their leaders. They will go and do those things after. And I mean, on top of the EFF saying that now the one of, what do you call him, disgruntled or dismissed or suspended activists of controversies of a party and goes and blow the whistle on them or on himself to say he has conducted himself in an unbecoming manner. But let me say, you know, in opening that part, lawlessness should never be allowed in all fronts.
Yes, sir.
If there was a crime committed, it doesn't matter by who. Political parties work as a collectively. If somebody acted on behalf of a political party and did something wrong and the political party benefits from the acts of that person, they will be held accountable. Unfortunately, that's how the system works.
But the MK are saying we can't be held responsible for what he did. And he has a track record of not being above board, is what I say.
Yeah, but what we should say on paper and on record is that even if they did not sanction that, even if he volunteered to commit acts of crime, after investigations and following the IEC regulations, if the MK is found to have unduly benefited from the acts of that particular individual, it cannot be left, you know, undealt with. I don't know whether it will be dealt with before election or after the election, but it is a criminal offense, or it is an offense in the Republic of South Africa to unduly benefit from an illegal process or activity. And that's why I'm saying.
Okay, so what is the process? For those that have not been in touch this week, what happened with the MK party?
Well, one of the, and actually I don't know why do people refer to him as a founder or a leader, because the MK had come and said, no, he's one of our volunteers and we don't have formal structures in the Western Cape.
But he's claiming he's the one who went to do the registration, is
yes.
he not?
No. The person who actually broke the news is not Khumalo, not the guy who registered the party.
Okay.
It's a guy from the Western Cape who said they had to forge people's signatures.
Oh, yes.
They had to go and take people from job seekers' roles and the metro of Cape Town and put them in the party list as signatures, and they forged people's signatures. One, that's a criminal offense. But, you know, this, I don't know whether it's Section 204 or what section of the Criminal Procedure Act, where people commit crime, and then when they are caught up in a situation like being expelled by a party, you go, you rush and you say to the state, I'll be the witness and you must exonerate me from prosecution.
Yeah.
The MK has come with a damning statement to say, no. Actually, we want him arrested if he did something on our behalf or under our name, and he needs immunity from prosecution. We want the state not to give him immunity. Look. Bake fresh. The sure. MK is either, if it's not them, it's Zuma. If it's not Zuma, MK, it's MK, IEC, IEC, Zuma, and all that. And I think we will be stuck with this up to and including after the elections. Because next week on Friday the 10th, which will be exactly like 19 days, you know, before the national elections, the Constitutional Court will be sitting in front of a full bench to determine whether Ntate Jacob Zuma is eligible to contest elections to go to parliament. parliament, and they're going to be on the news for quite some time.
Sure.
And I think these are very, you know, difficult and complex elections we've ever had as a country, for various reasons or for genuine reasons. And the IEC itself also is found to be wanting here and there. For example, if this whistleblower from MK did not rise and talk about the legal activities, IEC would have not picked up. So there are no trust and check balances in the IEC process. They would have not known. We would have not known. You understand? So I think this is part of a growing and developing process and system.
Question is this, though. So as much as the IEC might not have the capacity to verify that Botsang did sign this petition to say he will vote for the WOW party, are the numbers parties are expected to collect realistic?
Look, Brett, I don't think
I know you need a barrier to entry.
Yes,
otherwise,
yes.
Every Tom, Dick and Sally will be registering to be on
the voter's roll. Yeah.
But are the numbers realistic? And are we surprised that you're finding that signatures are being forged?
Look, I'm not surprised, and I can tell you it has been happening. We just never knew about it.
Sure.
If I am told to collect that 15,000 signatures, even you as an individual, from your followers only on social media, whether it's your followers of music or of WOW What a Week podcast, you can collect 15,000 signatures easily. You can actually, almost 1,000 of them can be your family members. You understand? You can take neighbors, family members, IDs and signatures and tell them you are raising funds for community services and you register a party. It is not a foolproof system.
Sure.
But also, I don't think we can burden an institution like the IEC until we have our electorate voting system digitized, whereby if the IEC scan or punches the list of a certain political party, for example, the system will pick it up to say this ID number is duplicated or it's fraudulent. For example, right now when you apply either for your ID or your passport or your driver's license or even a bank account, we have a system that is interlinked.
Sure.
Whereby you don't have to verify. The bank can say, this name, this ID belongs to this person and he's got an account at another bank.
Sure.
Until we arrive at a point where we have a system like that for verification purposes, I feel sorry we cannot blame the IEC for almost everything that is happening. It's too much of a burden on them.
Are we moving on to former President Thabo Mbeki? So the other day, former President Thabo Mbeki speaks about how things in this country started deteriorating after he was recalled. What are your thoughts on that? And is he attacking JZ? Is this because of the MK that all of a sudden he is claiming such?
There's various reasons behind that. I call it an attack. The attack on President Zuma by President Mbeki in the last 2-3 months has went up a little bit. And I will tell you, there may be various reasons towards that. One, I think the elders of the ANC has come up to defend their organization.
Sure.
And they may be having various reasons. It could be the love of the organization. It could also be to cover, you know, the wrongs of the organization. I mean, to go to an extent of calling him a wolf, you know, that we have been having off. This is a gentleman, and I have high respect for President Mbeki. He started by blaming the ESCOM and the SARS on President Zuma and his people.
When he was given a white paper himself?
Exactly what I'm saying. He was given a white paper by himself. Oh. Now, President Mbeki is very smart, or his advisors, or his speech writers. You know, when he sits there and he talks of these figures and what happened when, for a person who doesn't apply their mind and know what has been happening in the country, they may say, this was the best president we've ever had. This president left the country in very good, stable economic situation. And things were working under President Mbeki. But this is how government system works. If Fresh is in power and Fresh messes up or fails to adhere to rules and regulation. And Botsang and take comes after 5 years and takes over. And when I takes over, the cracks of you not doing your job start showing. Obviously, people will blame it at me or on me because the cracks started showing that time. But I want to challenge and counter President Mbeki's statements. Let me start by the one where he says, when he was recalled in 2008 after Polokwane 2007, he still hung up on the Polokwane 2007 issue. I mean, we are in 2024. And he said things started falling apart. Migodoi, that's what he called them, you know, ANC members in Migodoi, and they are criminals and they are thugs and all those things. It's so funny that three ANC presidents.
Why is he name calling?
Exactly the point. Why is he name calling? But you name call.
Because Migodoi is like a mangy mongrel.
You see, he calls them Migodoi a few months back, and he says, how do you expect me to come and campaign for Ipatia Migodoi led by criminals?
Oh, wow.
How? Fast forward 3 months down the line, he is on the forefront campaigning only after Jacob Zuma is seen to be cuckoo and crazy, betraying the ANC, voting and campaigning with MK while he's a member of the ANC. Now President Mbeki rises and now he's campaigning for Migodoi, he's campaigning for criminals, he is talking about how the Zuma administration was bad, he's talking about how, and this one is very interesting, how Zuma administration wanted to capture and destroy SARS. First, let me tell you on record, and our viewers can go and check, in the history of the Republic of South Africa, When Ntate Tom Moyane, the former commissioner of SARS, took over, let me tell you what happened that time. Pravin Gordhan, the prime minister of South Africa that I regard him, because he has said his prime is better than other ministers, was the commissioner of SARS before Tom Moyane. Do you know that before that time, SARS had a shortfall of 60 billion rands that they were supposed to collect? You know, they have a planning. They've got a medium and long-term planning to say, this is the amount of money. They were in short of 60 billion when Pravin handed over to Tom Moyane. And Tom Moyane came in under Jacob Zuma. Pravin Gordhan was under President Mbeki. When Tom Moyane, and it's on record, took over SARS, the same SARS that President Mbeki is alleging that him and Jacob Zuma wanted to capture and destroy, came in. He took over SARS to unprecedented, unparalleled, unmatched records of making 1.1 trillion excess in collection of revenue. It never happened in the history of South Africa that SARS collected more than a trillion rands above the projections. And we are quiet. We don't want to say, oh, okay, if Moyane was that horrible and bad and corrupt, how did he collect 1.1 trillion? The question then becomes, what did we do with the 1 trillion? And after, because he was not there for 1 year. Let us go back as a nation and look at the infrastructure development and progress during the so-called 9 wasted years of Jacob Zuma, the 2 terms of Jacob Zuma. Infrastructure, and not private company infrastructure in the country. I'm talking about public service infrastructure, building of universities, schools, roads, and everything else, the housing sector and you know type of houses we're building for the so-called RDP houses, the quality improved. Understand? So when it suits ANC leaders, they point, they call each other Migodois, they call each other traitors, they call each other that ANC of Ramaphosa, and all of them. It's not only the President Mbeki. Understand? Mr. Motlanthe himself said the ANC must be collapsed. It's him who said it first, before Zuma. ANC must lose election, ANC must be collapsed. Now Zuma goes and does what his comrade Motlanthe is doing, he's collapsing the ANC, he's making loose. Now, suddenly, Zuma is a bad person. But it is also President Zuma himself who now, being in the MK, stood up and said this thing of stealing elections, this thing of making shenanigans is going to an end because they know. So all these three former presidents of the ANC are getting up and getting against each other and against their own organization. I don't think they are doing us a favor, and I don't think they are appealing to a person like me or somebody who didn't know who to vote for. You know, it's like kids, it's like little children throwing stones at each other. And now President Mbeki is blaming the so-called counter-revolutionaries and enemy agent for sabotaging ESCOM. How didn't they pick it up with all the government intelligence, that there's counter-intelligence and counter-progress? But also, if you say it's counter-revolutionaries, what revolution are we in? What revolution did it happen under President Mbeki, except that when the ANC had two-thirds majority under his administration, they failed to address the land question that he acknowledges. Mm-hmm. They failed to change some laws. We are still sitting with acts of parliament of 1940s and 1930s of this country. You understand? We're still using acts of parliament. And who were the counter-revolutionaries? They worked and acted against themselves. They derailed against themselves. But these are very interesting. Somebody asked me, do I think President Mbeki and President Motlanthe are coming in to save Ramaphosa or to save the ANC? I think more to save the ANC and to make sure that Zuma and his people are not wrestling the ANC out of them. But also, Fresh, ask yourself, why are these old, these retired men and women of the ANC coming out gun blazing? What are they defending? What is it that they do not want us to know?
Sure.
And I'm the one who's always saying, when it suits the ANC and its leaders, including President Mbeki, President Motlanthe, and others, they say ANC is a broad church. We work collectively. We do things collectively. But when it's time to own up to your failures, to own up to your wrongs, to own up to your corrupt deeds and activities, they want to separate. It's no longer collective. Their current president, who's the president of the Republic, Mr. Ramaphosa, looking at the Zondo Commission, stands up and say the ANC is the number one corruptor in this country. Now, other one is calling them Mikodoi. Other ones want to collapse them. Other one says wolves. Other one says corrupt. These are the leaders of an organization that wants to still hold on to power. Mm. But I said to somebody, you know, in closing on TM, I've been having sleepless nights these days that it looks like the ANC, and we did talk about it last week, they will come back with more than 50%. It will mean to me the people of the Republic of South Africa are happy with the ruling ANC. And once people are happy, we must shut up.
Are they happy with the ruling ANC, or would they rather the devil they know than take a risk at having coalitions that might deteriorate things even further? I've got friends in Lesotho who are complaining that since the coalitions, things are possibly worse than they've been in a very long time.
Yeah.
And maybe it's people just saying, you know what, I'd rather we keep, you know, taking along in the hope that things will get better. Joburg has had, 10 mayors in 2 years?
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen at a national level if we have a coalition?
Maybe that's what we should call a revolution. When people are revolting, when people are saying, we don't want the status quo, we don't know what the future holds for us. But we always say, and when we listen to motivational speakers, we always say, if you are sitting on a comfort zone, if you don't push that window or that door, you will never know what is behind it. Mm. I cannot floor any of the opposition parties, because they've never been in power, they've never been in charge. Mm. I may even call them brakis or mabrakana, as the president has said, but they've never been given an opportunity to see what they can do. Except, you know, people will start saying, we had Gating McKenzie and the PA in some small drop in the Karoo.
Sure.
We have EFF being the opposition and in a coalition. But we need to get somewhere. If we don't get out of the comfort zone, and we say this, having have said before, the ANC have done well where they were doing well or where they were supposed to do well. Mm. But are we saying, if you are sitting with your 1982 old Jeep and there's an opportunity to can upgrade to a better one which is eco-friendly and all, you are not going to do that because you are stuck with this old thing that is unique? No, it doesn't work like that. Human being must change. Change is progressive. Change is very progressive. And I'm sorry I mentioned your Jeep.
No, my Jeep is still growing. Like, even my little Land Rover here is still growing perfectly.
Yeah. But yeah, well, and certainly that's the state we are in as a nation.
Let's go overseas. There's quite a bit happening. Derko, Tlaisin Munyela is in the news. South Africans abroad voted. I think London, as a polling station, apparently had more people on the voters' roll in London.
In London,
than any individual polling station in the country.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of South African passport holders and potential voters who are living in London.
Sure.
And then I think followed by Australia. Even Dubai, I was surprised that we have so much big numbers. Mm. But the polls have been completed, and Derko has issued a statement that the diplomatic bags, we call them ABACs, you know, the voting papers are in there, they've been dispersed safely to South Africa. But in between that, Then the African National Congress First Deputy Secretary General, Menomvula Mokonyane, wrote a letter that one of them leaked to Comrade Ambassador, Comrade High Commissioner, Comrade Consul General, to have an online meeting with them to fight elections as part of the ANC campaign. And the DA got hold of that letter.
To fight elections how?
Yeah, like contest, like to challenge, to like the campaign, part of the campaign, you know, to say they must do the job abroad, they must work. Look, number one, there is nothing wrong in talking to your deployees or members who are sitting abroad.
I was going to say, in an election year, for instance, as a, let's say, the consular general, obviously the office becomes a voting station,
yes,
as it were. How does it work then? Like, are you conflicted as a consular general in terms of what you can or can't do?
Look, Fresh, first of all, in diplomatic side, let me start by saying, once you are posted abroad, you are there representing the country, not the political party.
That's my thought.
That is why you even find people from opposition parties, the Botswanwilwas, the Katasilikas, the Tony Leons,
yes,
and all, you find them as heads of mission representing the country. So it is for the best interest of the country. That is the departure point. The second part is, you are right when you say the South African mission abroad becomes a voting station, becomes the representative of the IEC. Okay? Now, whether it's happening physically at the chancellery, at the office, or at a rented place somewhere, but the head of mission and the staff, the diplomatic staff members of it, they become senile by virtue of having access to ballot papers, to, you know, transportation of them and all those things. And therefore, they shouldn't be seen as influencing the situation. That's one part. The ANC has obviously members that they've deployed abroad, or they've recommended to be heads of missions or diplomats. There's nothing wrong in their SG office talking to them. But once you start addressing them and writing to them and engaging them, whether they fly in or they are online with state resources, and state resources can be the computer they were using, can be the airtime they were using, can be the time that they are there representing the state, there's something very wrong in that. I don't think it's the correct thing to do. But in between that, that is what happened abroad, and DA has gone to court.
So what does this letter say exactly?
It was inviting them to a meeting to come and discuss the ANC campaign program. But you know what was interesting for me? Who did Nomvula Mokonyane send those letters to? ANC deployees abroad as diplomats only, or to all other diplomats, even from other political parties? So I don't have the facts regarding it, but I assume they send it to those that they know are their sympathizers or their members.
And exactly how were they expected to participate in this?
They had an online meeting. Yes, how are they supposed to participate? How are they supposed to campaign? Look, it means then the ambassador or the High Commissioner would stand up and go to have a party and a meeting with South Africans living in that particular country or town and tell them to vote ANC, because that is part, you know, campaigning. But in between all that, the ambassador, now flipping it back home, the ambassador of the USA, again, your friend, what do you call it? This guy is a problem, man. He goes and tweets, the American ambassador to South Africa, he goes and tweets during the past week that he had a meeting, a one-on-one with the IEC. Now remember what happened a week or two before. The DA had approached the American senators to say they must push for being, you know, observers as USA senators and not as a government or a country.
Sure.
Now the American ambassador goes and raises them. And Clayson Munyela, the DERECO spokesperson, look, I have high respect for Clayson.
I love Clayson.
His hands on. But one, Clayson Munyela must start differentiating between the ANC spokesperson and DERECO spokesperson. We all know, and he doesn't hide that he's ANC to the heart. But once you start tweeting and releasing statements on behalf of DERECO, on things that are talking the ANC language, then we have a problem with that. You should be able to differentiate that.
Did he respond to Ruben Brigetti?
He is denying, he is defending that He's not denying. He's defending that it is common cause that the diplomats will engage with diplomats during elections to assure them. Yes, they do. He is correct. You will meet the dean of the African diplomats, the dean of Mercosur diplomats. You will meet the AU, SADC, and so forth. That is normal. But it should not be IEC meeting them. It should be DERCO facilitating if they want to engage, and IEC can be there to assure investors, to assure diplomats in the country. But what is wrong? And I've mentioned multilateral organizations. I've mentioned SADC, AU, United Nations Organization, and the deans of diplomatic corps. But meeting bilaterally, why would South African IEC go and have a one-on-one bilateral meeting with the Americans? Why not with the Cubans? Why not with the Russians? And I said, are we having an ambassador? We have two ambassadors in the U.S., one for the United Nations, one for the country bilateral, and almost four consul general in the U.S. I've never heard or seen a situation where then there's elections in the U.S. Our ambassadors or heads of, they go and engage with the electoral mission there to say, no, we want to check if everything is in order. That's not how it works.
Exactly.
With multilateral organizations.
And what are you? Our prefect.
Exactly. No, you know, like a we are reporting to a prefect.
We're checking to see if the natives are not restless and they're towing the line because democracy is our baby. No, that's rubbish.
Exactly. And for that, I think Clayson didn't handle this properly. You know, it's also setting the record straight to say they are forgetting that they are working with the reckless American ambassador who likes cheating and saying things to try and create an impression that he's the most important ambassador this country has. And for me, they must manage this situation proper because already there are challenges towards the IEC on how they handle diplomatic mission voting abroad. I mean, for example, the DA wanted the so-called honorary consuls to also be voting stations where they stay. But honorary consuls, number one, are not South African, mainly are not South African citizens.
Sure.
And secondly, they don't have an office usually. They will be using their homes or offices. And it's prominent people in a society in that particular country that you will appoint to can take care of South African affairs, mainly trade, business. And they don't issue passports. They are not consuls. And they are honorary, you know, then they are limited. So if we don't use our DERCO offices and spokesperson to focus on such issues, to clear such as and misconceptions, then we are missing the mark.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but look, I just want these elections to come and go, man. There's so many challenges, nitty-gritties. I just hope they go on peacefully and there should not be any, you know, infiltration. And but we must keep international communities like we've been doing it as observers.
Sure.
And keep those who we know that they influence politics in other countries away from our. We already have enough problems that we can mess up at this stage.
Absolutely. Let's go to Senegal. So Senegal has adopted Arabic as one of the official languages, dropping French though.
Yeah, but disappointed. Our friend, he's what? A month in the office?
Yeah.
Dropping French like other former Francophone countries, I understand. It's okay.
But your entire country speaks French, though.
Yes. They are dropping it as official. They will as an official language. They will continue using their native languages as well as French in communication. You understand? Look, in South Africa, English is one of our official languages. But me and you, when we are outside this studio, we are Setswana. But we still have English as one of the official languages. Or Kasital. But my concern with the president of Senegal is that you drop French, it's okay. You pick up Arabic. Why Arabic? When actually we have Swahili as the most spoken language. This is just my thinking. Why not Swahili?
But what is spoken more in the area, in the immediate area though? Would it be Swahili or would it be Arabic?
Look, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't hesitate to give them, you know, equal. But also they may have opted for Arabic because of the trade relations they're starting to, to. Like we have adopted Chinese, not officially as an official language, but it will work better for South Africa if more South Africans speak Mandarin. Sure. You understand? I'm just disappointed that you drop French, you pick another foreign language. And we know the history. One day we should have a conversation about the history of the Arab. Arabs towards African people. It's a very serious and sad history.
In fact, a lot of Arabs in North Africa will be very quick to say, I'm not African.
Yeah. Well, they've said it several times.
Despite the fact that your country is in Africa, on the continent of Africa. They'll be very quick to say, I'm not African.
I'm Arab, yes. Mm. So, the president of Senegal has opted for Arabic as an official language. I had wished he had said Swahili, or even stand up and say one of the local languages, like South Africa did, is becoming an official language. Mm. You jump your own languages at home. You see, the issue of mental colonialism, and colonialism comes in different forms these days.
Sure.
We are economically colonized. We tend to do things the way our funders and those that we do business with, we tend to do the way they want. It's no longer the colony of Britain and France and what. It's an economic colony. Like, look at South Africa now. We are so much in love with President Putin. We are so much in love with the Chinese. We even introduce Mandarin to our schools. We take our kids to study. There's nothing wrong with that because it's based on economy. But we should be conscious of saying we want to defeat colonialism, erode it, remove it from us, and we bring neocolonialism in. Understand? We don't appreciate our own culture and languages, and we are quick to jump from one colonial and foreign language to another one. And for me, that's my challenge. We are actually stalling the decolonizing of the African mind.
Sure.
And I think we can do better as a nation.
We are kind of running out of time. But before we do that, we need to pay some respect to Drs. Pheko, Motsoko Pheko, and Motsoe Nyane, plus the Rose of Soweto, Dingane Thobela.
I don't know
what are your thoughts on those three losses.
A sad state, you know, in South Africa, just in 1 week. Actually, in 1 day, we lost, you know, Dr. Sam Motsoe Nyane and the Rose of Soweto, Dingane Thobela, age 57 and 97, you know, on the same day.
Dingane was young.
Very young, fresh.
57 is young.
Very young. That's a sad loss. But Dr. Motsoe Nyane, look, historically, we know the gentle giant of South African business and in development and all that. He has done very well. He has ran his race. He has groomed and trained and developed many African people.
I was going to say, why should South Africans care about this loss? Yeah, Dr. Motsoe Nyane.
Look, Fesh, those who know the history, we know how he stood up and formed with the late Ntate Maponya. I think he was also a Dr. Maponya.
Yes.
By the time he passed on, to form the African Bank, which was wrestled off them by white capital at a later stage. Mm. And you know what is important about how they did it? Mm. They didn't go and ask for foreign donors. Mm. They didn't go and ask multilateral companies and these big companies to give them money to form the African Bank. They went to people, noble South Africans like Fred, and say, donate 1 rand, donate 10 rands to form the African Bank. Mm. And you know what is beautiful about Dr. Motsoe Nyane? After that, he used the media, he started helping to form the Sowetan. When we moved from the Post newspaper to the Sowetan, working with Bo, the late Ntate Agri Cluster, to spread this word of saying we have a bank of our own at the moment, and the people should invest in that. And some companies that were black-owned, they started having bank accounts and investing in the African Bank. But he was also not a greedy person. He was not selfish. When he had done that, he moved on to focus, you know, on his farming and his private businesses. He didn't hold on to that. So he imparted skills.
Sure.
He shared that. So for me, that's a gentle giant of the South African business and industry. And like I said, when elders retire, I'm one of the people that say, yes, we have lost, but he has done, especially when they've done their part. And then we flip the coin, we go to Dr. Motsoko Pheko. In my books, and I'm one of his products, that's one person that has kept the Pan-Africanism alive in South Africa. Mm. We know when he was the PAC representative to the United Nations, how historically, when other organizations like the ANC and the UNO and other international organizations, the Release Mandela campaign and the anti-apartheid movement, they didn't want to recognize the PAC as one of the liberation movement, how Motsoko Pheko stood up and fought that battle. Understand? And also, the library he has created on Pan-African Africanism and history that is sitting at UNISA and other institutions about the history of the PAC and Pan-Africanism in general.
Sure.
I think he was a great person, actually, when I've been called on by the former APLA commanders to come and be part of the team that are going to pay respect to Dr. Peku. But I think also he was an elderly person who had ran his race. He had done what he was supposed to do. And finally, the Rose of Soweto. He was not called the Rose for nothing. We were very proud youngsters when Dingaan Thobela actually was almost of our age that time, 5 years older than me, that he showed us that there's hope for a township boy who went and captured 2 world titles. And with those, may their soul rest in peace and let their legacy and what they've done for this country. And for me, very especially to Dr. Peku, I wonder if my Abla green army uniform will fit.
So you're going to be part of the Green Brigade then?
Yes.
That'll send him off?
Yes. That's one of the decisions, and I've received notice from one of the former APLA commanders to say they are calling on the Green Brigade of APLA with the Red Beret that will be sending off. One, I'm worried about the fitting. Two, I'm worried about the drill. So they should just make me be the one who talks there to the force.
Please don't my banner us. Please.
I'm worried about that, Fresh.
Apart from the fighting and arms and ammunition training that you got when you're a member of APLA, what would you say was your biggest learning back then? I mean, you were a child when you joined APLA. You were what, 16, 17?
Yeah, 16, going to 17. Fresh.
What's your lasting learning from APLA to this day?
Discipline. That's one thing I've learned, to be disciplined. And the APLA slogan, high morale, high discipline, I lived by that even in my adult life.
Yes.
And by the way, coincidentally, moving from APLA and joining the diplomatic service, Ntate Motsoko Peku was one of the people who were instrumental to push me to say, stay in there, drop the arms and do that. I didn't like it that time. But the discipline I learned from being trained by PAC leaders and APLA forces, it has made me to be disciplined and to also stand the test of time, Fresh. I go through hell in life.
Sure.
And I realize
I've witnessed some of the hell you've had to endure.
Yes.
And you are no shame, Mustina.
I used to have an economics teacher at high school at Metric who used to say his name. I was studying, he was from Naledi. And he used to say his name, his nickname is Ayegobeki Lentsimbi.
Sure.
You can't bend that iron rod. Sure. I used to say, people are talking about hard nuts to crack. I don't think I'm a hard nut to crack. I think I'm a nut that cannot be cracked. And thanks to APLA, look, if you can survive being a guerrilla, I'll survive on anything in life, Fresh.
Sure.
On this week, this guy, I'll be 2 years sitting at home, 5th of May. 2 years sitting at home, no income, no formal work except this, and no income. And I sit and I reflect and I look back and say, how did I make it to this point? And it is some of the training that, we've enjoyed as APLA forces. And it's some of the things that being in the military or law enforcement or, armed forces, they instill that kind of discipline in you. Not all of us, but majority of people who have been in the military. And they become very disciplined people who can stand anything under the sun.
Absolutely.
And that's one thing I take away from applying the PAC with me.
Before we let you go, what do you think of the scent in the room?
When I came here, I wanted to ask you this gadget, and it's also more, I'm breathing better, I can tell you. So I assume it's a humidifier or whatever, but it also has a very natural, nice aroma.
So we are working on a wow scent.
Okay.
Because I'm big on scent, as you know.
Yeah.
When I greet you, when you leave, you smell like me.
Exactly. You always leave this smell. Luckily, it's a man's smell. It's not a feminine one, so it won't get me into trouble.
Yeah, so we're working on a wow scent.
Okay.
But you'll be able to get the scent for yourself or for your office space or for your room. So this diffuser right now is the wow scent we're working on. I hope you approve.
No, I'm actually liking it. I'm liking it, and it's good. The good. I don't know who came with the idea, but it's a good innovation.
And we'll also have it for your car, if you want to have the wow scent in your car.
Well, I can actually do well with one in my apartment. You know, the apartment that I'm using to run the business.
Yes, it will
work better there.
We will even provide a diffuser for your apartment. When people walk in there, they can...
Especially when I've not been there or nobody's been there for days. I think it's a good idea, but it is also very... powerful because this studio is wide open.
Sure.
While one can still, you know, smell the aroma and the incense of on it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Botsang, where do we get a hold of you?
Thanks, Brother Fresh. BotsangM@gmail.com and at BotsangM on social media. And then on WhatsApp, it's 082-485-9100. Before I even conclude, I must put a disclaimer on something.
Yes,
and
sir.
I know you have done that. What I say on this show, I say it in my personal capacity, private capacity, due to my research and work or knowledge or experience. And if people think I've said something good or nice, they must not go and abuse or say things somewhere and say, but Botsang said this.
Sure.
They can inform themselves further. There's a lady who wrote, last week we spoke about how they, remember when a week before, how we spoke about Advocate Mkhwebane and the pension fund. And somebody wrote to me a very long email to say they have gone through that through their ex-employer. And you know, with little Google search, I advise that person to say, no, you've got a case, go and challenge your employer.
Sure.
It's about the pension fund. The person was dismissed from work and she was not given the employer's contribution of the pension fund. And the Pension Fund Act is very clear on that. But I managed to respond to that person to say, that's not what Botsang is saying. That's what the Pension Fund Act is saying. You are entitled to that.
But what Fresh is saying is you're entitled to a commission. When she gets paid out.
The commission, okay, no. But I saw something nice. One of the followers suggested that since we are struggling financially, we should open a line whereby we'll have subscribers and limit the news. Those who subscribe, we give them something. Those who didn't subscribe, we don't.
That's a plan.
It's a plan. It's a good plan.
We'll look into it.
Thanks, Fresh. Thanks to the followers and viewers.
And we're done with this week's hashtag Politrix with Botsang Modimoamemuilwa. Coming to you from AMP Studios, downtown Johannesburg. We're part of the Africa Podcast Network. Shout out to Pezulu Works for the cinematography, our engineer and audio scientist, Otis the Flo Fraser, Botsang Modimoamemuilwa, our guest as always, our creative producer, Kuvesh Mohan, show producer, Keletso Modisakeng, our scent producers, Senti. Google them or find them on Instagram, Scent with a Y at the end, Senti. Collaborating with them on The Wow Scent. Email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Till next week. Have an incredibly wow week in spite of yourselves. We're out of here.